And this is a reading from The Song Stations, the latest of the novels featuring the early 20th century railway detective Jim Stringer. This is a First World War novel. Jim has gone with the 17th Northumberland Fusiliers, who were known as the Railway Pals, to work on the railways on the Western Front. His particular job is working on light railways, driving small steam locomotives carrying artillery up to the front. In this passage, he has got a day off, and he's gone to the town of Amiens, behind the lines, with his young friend Alfred Tinsley. Jim is in his early to mid-30s. Alfred is only 19. They're both very keen on trains, and Alfred wants to be a train driver after the war. They've been to Amiens once before. And the place they work at is called Burton Dump. That's where they are on the front line. But at the moment, they're in Amiens. Alfred Tinsley sat opposite to me. We knew Amiens by the approach of a great cathedral spire, famous for its cathedral, was Amiens. Its cathedral and its station, which was now closing around us. The place was normal, as before. Civilian services running to time, gorgeous coloured advertising posters. The station dining rooms, located on our arrival platform, seemed all fitted out in gold, and there was a white-coated bloke sitting inside folding napkins. Some military wagons and troop carriages were to be seen, but these were in far-off sidings. I pointed out a British 280 to Tinsley, and he said, "Well, there are heaps of those round here." He didn't seem particularly interested. The ticket collector looked long and hard at our passes, but finished off his inspection with a respectful nod. "That's the Frenchies all over for you," I said to Tinsley as we strolled through the ticket gate. "I like to keep you guessing." Coming out from under the station glass, we saw that Amiens was enclosed in a thin white mist of the sort you only seem to get in the afternoons. It was like the half-formed idea of snow, and the place was freezing. Still, they had the tables set out in front of the cafes, and there were people sitting at them too, usually great-coated soldiers with pretty, muffled-up women. I saw a man smoking, and then passing the cigarette to the woman. I've never seen that done in Britain. Women seemed to be a speciality at Amiens. Beautiful ones, I mean, and we saw some real peaches. "They've got everything here," said Tinsley. "Women, proper buildings that stand up, tablecloths on the tables." We came upon the cathedral, and the size came as a shock, every part of it trying to be higher than the other part. The Germans had been in Amiens at the start of the war. How come they hadn't wrecked it? "This is Gothic," I said to Tinsley when we were inside. "Like York Minster, I think." It was like York Minster, only more so. Tinsley put some change into a box marked in English, "For the poor of Amiens," rewarding the town for being normal. Behind the cathedral was an area of narrow canals running between ancient-looking houses connected by wooden bridges. It was a beautiful spot, but I looked into the waters of the canals expecting to see dead men floating there. And when I looked into the sky, it appeared to be unnaturally empty and silent, as though something had lately been taken away. As we drifted about, the light fell, and the buildings became distinct by virtue of the different colours of light showing from them. About half of them turned out to be pubs or restaurants, and this quarter was evidently a big draw for the Tommies. We had three or four glasses of beer apiece, then went into a little restaurant and ordered what turned out to be a quarter of a chicken apiece with herbs and fried potato and gravy. There was no gravy at Burton Dump, never had been and never would be. The owner of the place came up to us and asked, "Bon?" "Très bon," I said, but that only encouraged the bloke to say something else in French that I didn't get, but that I fancied might be, "Thank you for fighting the war, I hope you win it." "You know, I could live in France," said Tinsley, as we were fishing out our francs to pay the bill. "You are doing," I said. "Now, after the war, I mean," he said, and I was struck by his confidence in using that expression. "If you lived in France, you couldn't be a train driver in York," I said. "I know," said Tinsley. "That's the trouble." He must have been a bit squiffed, because he started in about how the locomotives were more exciting over here. The carriages wider bodied, stations bigger. They had bigger ideas about everything in France. Only he couldn't live without tea, and I didn't run to that. When we left the restaurant, the owner said, "Bon journée." "That means, have a good journey," said Tinsley. "It's the politeness of the French for you." After our supper, there was a bit more drifting, but it struck me that while Tinsley's body might be wandering aimlessly in the maze of little houses and canals, his mind was not. "What are you after?" I said. "Oh," he said, and he coloured up. "Something Bernie Dawson told me about ages ago." "A pub," I said. "Not exactly a pub," said Tinsley. "I think you want to be over that way," I said, indicating a quarter where the lights in the windows burned lower and redder. He'd missed his chance in Albert, so here was his other opportunity. "Fancy coming with me?" Tinsley inquired, looking in the direction indicated and not at me. "I think you should." Towards the end of one particular cobbled street, the only people on view were women, mostly sitting on the first floor windowsills and looking at the blokes walking past, the uniformed ones especially. Tinsley stopped and eyed one back, going crimson in the process. I was sure it would have been the longest he'd ever looked directly at a woman, about 3 seconds. It was enough, though, and she jumped down off the window ledge, indicating that he should follow her into the house. "I might just go in here for a glass of beer," Tinsley said, turning towards me. "Afterwards," I said, "wash it." "What?" he said, with a strange sort of grin. "The beer glass." The woman had left the door half open, disclosing an ordinary sort of room of a good size, with 2 soldiers, sergeants, sitting in it smoking cigars, having either just finished their business there or smoking in anticipation of it. I removed my cap and watched from the doorway as a woman, an older version of the one who had been on the windowsill, came into this room from a smaller one to the rear and spoke to Tinsley. She used some word like assignation. Wasn't her friend a pretty lady? An assignation was possible for 7 francs. So Tinsley fished about in his pockets for a while before announcing to the woman, "I've only got 5. She didn't understand, or pretended not to. Tinsley turned to me and looked at me, his face redder than I would have thought it possible to be, and I handed him 2 francs. "Oh, thanks, old man," he said, "I'll pay you back." And he added in an underbreath, "You know, I'm more shaky than I was on the first day of the Somme battle." But he hadn't been shaky at all before that show, as far as I could see. "Per favore," he said, turning and handing over the coin to the woman. "That's Italian," I said, from behind him. "You're in France." But it made no difference. While the 2 sergeants smoked on, he was being escorted into the rear room. "I see you in the goat bar," I called out. That was an estaminet with a painting of a goat over the door. I'd walked past it a couple of times. I was fishing for cigarettes prior to quitting the house when the madame returned with another woman, about of an age with the one on the windowsill, and a first-class belter, it had to be admitted, being small, dark, and dancerish, with an amused expression. The madame stood her in front of me and told me the name of the girl was Françoise. So I put out my hand and we shook hands, at which Françoise laughed a little, but only a little. I looked sidelong at the sergeants to see if they thought this a funny going on, but they just continued with their own talk. Françoise eyed me steadily as the madame gave an account of all the points in favour of her. This was done mainly in French, but sometimes an English expression would break in, such as, "You will like her," at which I thought, "Oh, I already do." I believe the idea was that I would interrupt the speech, pay over the money, and go off with Françoise. But seeing I was making no move, the madame came to a halt with the question, "Oui? Non?"